Thank you. And thank you, the program committee, also to give the opportunity to talk about books. Books used to be the core business of libraries, and then something went wrong. I guess quite a few things went wrong. But we are seeing new models for books, and my message to you will be that we need the support of libraries to make the transition to these new models, and I will present at least one model which is based on open access for monographs. So my talk will be, I'll start with a look at the traditional scholarly communication system and some of the flaws, and then I'll move to the benefits of open access, which was covered by Alma much more convincingly than I can do that. So basically I'll go over that very quickly, and I'll talk about what is happening for monographs in open access. Show you some examples. I'll show you some funding models behind these examples, and tell you a bit about OAPEN and OAPEN's approach to open access monograph publishing. And then what we do to make this transition. A number of things. We have the OAPEN library, we have some pilot projects we're running, and we are preparing, hopefully, new projects in Europe. And finally, a service that we launched last week, actually, the Directory of Open Access Books, following the example of the successful Directory of Open Access Journals. So this is the scholarly communication system, as it was once made, this picture, by Margot Barguer of Göttingen. And it's researchers doing research, turning into authors, then also turning into reviewers of works of colleagues. That is work organized by publishers who then edit, produce, distribute publications that are acquired by libraries and presented to researchers. And so there is a wheel of scholarly communication that drives science and scholarship forward. And that part of that moving forward is actually done through funding, of course, and funders play a very important part in that whole system. You could put costs to this system. This is the Dutch situation. Again, this is Horten. Alma talked about Horten earlier this morning. And here you have the total cost of the Dutch scholarly communication system, which is 2.4 billion euro. And one thing I'd like to point to is that the publishing part of that is actually quite small, less than 10%. But there is another thing that I'd like to point out, and that is that if you look at traditional academic publishing, it is basically dependent on public spending. It's research that is paid for by funders and universities. Authoring and reviewing is paid for not by publishers, but by the universities. And subscriptions are paid for by libraries. So basically, it's taxpayers' money that is running this traditional academic publishing model, just as actually the same goes for open access publishing. Now this is a graph. Again, this is a graph actually from Almas Van. I've been showing this graph all over Europe, and it is in a nutshell what is wrong with the traditional scholarly publishing model. First of all, there is the increase in costs for serials. This is the graph of expenditures of monographs and journals over a 20-year period by the American research libraries. And you see this steep rise of costs for journals, four times the rate of inflation, which is the red line in the middle. And the effect on that is that there is less money for monographs. So monographs have suffered. It is not only the libraries that suffered because of known as the serials crisis, it is also something that we now call the monograph crisis, which is actually also a crisis for book publishers. So this traditional model cannot be sustained. Something needs to change. And that is part of the reason why open access has become more and more important. Now, for traditional monographs, there's another point to be made, and that is not only it's losing its sustainability, it's also losing its relevance, where about 20 years ago, you'd be able to sell about 2,000 copies of a monograph to US libraries. that on average dropped to about 500, and indeed nowadays less. And you can't actually produce and sell a monograph in those quantities and expect to stay in business. So basically, something's gone wrong for monographs, and we desperately need a new publishing model. This is a briefing paper, a study commissioned by Knowledge Exchange. Most of you will know Knowledge Exchange. It's a collaborative institution or group of SURF, JISC, DEF, and here in Germany, DFG. And they commissioned a study on open access business models for research funders and universities. And they also looked at monographs. And actually, their conclusion is more or less that monographs will disappear unless we come up with a new form of research monograph. And their argument is that it should be primarily a digital monograph and provided in open access. And that would take part of the costs out of the system, and it would be a way forward. So now, this is where Alma Sawan actually went into her complete presentation, listing the benefits of open access, and they are listed here again. I just say one thing, that for publishers, you can see that open access is actually a very effective way to disseminate knowledge. And publishers should be very interested in this form of publishing. Economic benefits, again, these are for the figures presented earlier by Alma. I'm happy that they are the same. This is the Dutch, these would be the figures for the Dutch situation. The societal economic benefits, they won't translate to institutional benefits as easily, but still there are clear benefits. These are some examples of open access monograph publishers. All of these are interesting. I won't go into all of them, but there are some that are relatively new, like Open Humanities Press and Open Book Publishers, both founded by scholars, run by scholars. We say scholar-led publishers. There is Bloomsbury. Bloomsbury is a commercial publisher attempting to establish an open access model for monographs, which is basically a commercial model. The oldest one here on this page, I think the oldest one around, is the National Academies Press, which was established. They established their open access policy long before the word was there, even before the World Wide Web, I believe, in 1992. And they've been successful in achieving a huge audience for their books. So I'll just carry on. If you look at these examples and others and the funding models, you'll see very different approaches, but they all have one common element, which is that there will be an open access edition, and they will, next to that open access edition, actually sell other editions. And very often they'll be printed editions, or they might be e-books. Very often you'll see some sort of institutional support for the press. And examples here are National Academies Press, Athabasca University Press, Australian National University Press, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that later. Also, there is an increasing amount of library press collaborations, and you'll see quite a lot of that here in Germany, with one example that I'll name is Göttingen University Press, but also, for instance, Michigan with M Publishing and Michigan University Press. Some attempt there is made to provide value-added services. I'll give you one example later on. Bloomsbury chose that strategy. I can't tell you a lot about that, but I'll show you a little bit about Open Edition, which they introduced a model called freemium. And then there is the author side publication fee, which is actually the model quite common in journal publishing, but not very common among book publishers. And that is the model OAPEN is introducing, and that is used by Amsterdam University Press. That is also made possible by some research councils, such as NWO in the Netherlands and FWF in Austria. And it's also a model that you could say is promoted by Frances Pinter, the former publisher of Bloomsbury, and that she calls the idea for a global library consortium, which basically would be a buying consortium of books that are then made freely available in open access. Now, I talked about freemium. This is a licensing model for libraries. It's currently being introduced as a pilot. Libraries pay to receive open access content, but next to that open access, there's some premium content. The same publications will be offered not only in free HTML, but also in PDF or in EPUB, and there'll be some services connected to that. And then revenues of that income are split to between Open Edition and the publishers. And this model is intended to make, first of all, open access content discoverable, because if libraries buy the content, they actually also put in some effort to make the content discoverable for their students and scholars. It is also a model to provide some income, although not covering all costs, for publishers of open access books, and it helps to sustain the open edition platform. Another model is Australian National University Press, which is actually quite old already. I think it was established 5 or 6 years ago, and basically it's an e-press for open access monographs. Costs are covered by ANU's information budget, which means they are actually just paying for the whole service. They use central ICT services, but there is a distributed editorial effort. There are 20 ePress editorial boards all over Australia. And the principles behind this is that the press is seen as part of the scholarly communication infrastructure. Presses use the existing university infrastructure. And I'd like to show you the quote of Colin Steen, who says, "There is no point in supporting key academic research if there is no means of distributing and accessing it effectively." So this takes us to the OAPEN approach. This started out as an EU project, the EU co-funded project run by Amsterdam University Press. And then in that project, we developed an approach to open access publishing of books. We'd established an open access library to disseminate open access books. And we're still doing that. We're creating a quality controlled collection of books and trying to improve discoverability and usage. Now, after the close of that project, it is an independent foundation based at the National Library in The Hague. Our approach is hybrid, just as all the others behind books. There is a basic online edition that's free, and other editions, as I said, print on demand or e-books, are sold. But publishers can charge a publication fee for the open access edition. This is essential and it's necessary if professional publishers are to go this direction, publishing books in open access. Of course, authors retain copyright, and there is a long-term availability and preservation online through collaboration with National Library EDIPO. So the important thing, of course, is who pays the publication fee, and we don't have an answer. We think many institutions should take part in this. Most definitely the research funder, probably the university, and possibly also library or library consortia. And why should they do this? Well, we get back to the argument of Alma Swan. To ensure publication of peer-reviewed research results, to ensure effective dissemination, unrestricted access, and a goal in itself to advance the spread of knowledge. So what are the principles behind the transition to books in open access? Well, one is that research and dissemination belong together, and therefore the cost of dissemination should be part of the cost of research. Another is that funders' open access policy should be extended not only to include repositories and green preservation of publications, but also gold publishing. And budgets should not only be open for articles, but also for books. Finally, publishers should develop open access book publishing as a service to the scholarly community. Making the transition to open access books, we have three, let's say, lines of activity that we conduct. One is the library, another are the pilot projects I'll tell you a little bit about, and the last one is developing an infrastructure for the future. One part of that I'll show you, which is the directory of open access books. So first, the OAPEN library. What we do there is we organize content, try to create critical mass, and definitely try to increase visibility and retrievability in various ways. Here we have the homepage of the library. These are some of the publishers that are in the library. There are about 30 in all, with about 1,000 books. And this is a little drawing of the activity of the OAPEN library. So there's publishers on the left-hand side. Then we organize that content to make daily exports of the metadata. Library can import those exports into their online catalogs. We work with disseminators and with search engines like Europeana. We aggregate for Europeana. We provide the metadata and collaborate with discovery services such as WorldCat, Ex Libris, and Serial Solutions. And they, of course, provide their service to libraries as well. And finally, we offer a preservation service in collaboration with the EDIPO of the Dutch National Library. There are some future services that we will provide, hopefully. One is to include tools for researchers by working with providers such as Zotero and hopefully Mendeley and Papersea. We will collaborate in a project, a new project started by Europeana called Europeana Research, with full open access texts. We will try and integrate with Open Monograph Press. This is a new service done by the Published Knowledge Project, which was also responsible for the Open Journal System, and which will be released, I believe, in about 10 days, the first version, the test version. And I would very much like OAPEN to be to have a seamless connection with that system. We will also perhaps develop print-on-demand services and archival access. And we're investigating the possibility to use Crossmark, which is a service of Crossref, to develop a system of trust around open access books, something that is much needed in this transition from traditional monographs in printed form to, well, digital publications that have less clear authority. So another thing we're doing is conducting pilot projects. And the idea behind that is to simply start doing this, committing research funders and publishers to try open access publishing and then to study the results to see how what happens to books when they are open access, to compare usage figures and sales figures of open access books with traditionally published books, and then to come up with some recommendations for open access book publishing in the future. And there are currently two, one in the Netherlands and one in the UK. And hopefully we will start more of these pilots. I'm hoping that we will be able to work with some publishers and funders in Sweden. And in about 2 weeks, there is going to be a workshop dedicated to open access monographs here in Germany, in Göttingen. And hopefully that will result in some activity here in Germany as well. So if you look at these two pilots that are currently being conducted, they are very similar. One is run by GIST Collections, the other by OAPEN. The funding is different. GISC and the Arts and Humanities Council in the UK are a national research council in the Netherlands. There is a little difference in the focus of the pilot. Definitely, the OAPEN UK pilot is very much dedicated to also conduct research into the attitudes, into the into some of the questions and question marks around open access book publishing among all stakeholders, and they've conducted a series of workshops and surveys to get into that a bit more. This is something we're not doing so much in the Netherlands, but then in the Netherlands we are doing some more research into the cost of publishing. And so here you have the English publishers, just five, very varied in size. University of Wales Press is a very small press. Of course, Taylor & Francis, a very big one. Same for the Dutch. Springer is, well, you all know Springer. And let's say Technopress is just one woman. So there is a very varied lot of publishers taking part. The nice thing is that most of these publishers will continue open access publishing after these pilots, so that they have actually learned to provide, to develop this service and provide it through these pilots, and we really made a difference here. As they are pilots, there is no risk. You know, there are just a few publishers and there are just 80 books in all, and still what we learned from this is, I think, very relevant. Now, one of the things that came out of the Dutch pilot, and most figures are still will be still a year ahead before we'll come out with them, but one of the things is the cost of publishing, publishing and the cost of open access books. So you can see here that in the case of OpenNL, open access editions cost about 8,000 euros, and the print side almost the same, just over 8,000. So basically, if you wouldn't publish in printed form, wouldn't do all the physical distribution, wouldn't do all the marketing to sell the physical book, you could actually lower costs by making books available only in digital form, probably about 50%. Here are the cost range. There is a wide variety of looking at total costs only. You see that the most expensive book so far was 23,000. The cheapest one was 9,000. Now, both of these books were published by a professional press, and I'm quite sure that there are many books produced for much less. It's also the situation in the Netherlands, and I'm quite sure in other countries the situation will be slightly different. So we're looking for new pilot projects, and one of the angles there is that there are actually, if you look at continental Europe, there are many funders supporting traditional monograph publishing. They'll provide a grant for instance, printing, or for production, or for translation. And what if these funders would also provide the same money towards an open access model for monographs? If you use that money, combine it from a number of funders, and start a pilot, you'd already have it financed, and you could test this new model. So this is basically something that I think it will happen in Sweden, and hopefully also in other countries. So moving to the last part of the efforts we are doing to make a transition to open access publishing, which is establishing an infrastructure. And one of the elements we felt was missing, one of the elements that has been very important in journal publishing, was the directory of open access journals. So we decided we would develop a directory of open access books. Immediately you understand the meaning for this, the reason for this. It is for readers to help readers find open access content. It's not easy to find open access books because you don't know what you find. If you find a free book, if it's peer-reviewed, is it actually an academic book? Is it published under an open access license, or is it just free and under copyright protection? So this is to try and establish some sort of collection that is, we would say, properly published in open access and properly academic in the sense that it is peer-reviewed. So basically, it is also promoting standards for open access publishing, providing quality assurance, and obviously, we would like the Director of Open Access Books to integrate with library catalogs and with content aggregators everywhere. So this is just a small set of screenshots of the directory. Here we have the homepage. It's very simple. You can see that there are now 23 publishers at the launch and about 750 books. So if you type in a keyword, I think it is peace studies here, you will find 8 books at this moment. One is called Bomb Canada. You can also browse, of course, and here I browse by publisher to give you an idea of the publishers that are taking part. There are many dedicated open access publishers currently taking part, but also traditional ones. For instance, Brill in the Netherlands. Some are in there with a lot of books, such as Amsterdam University Press, but if you go down the list, you'll also see Göttingen, which is currently the only university press from Germany. But happily, this week, De Gruyter will also become part of DOAB with about 30 books, and maybe even today. So here you have a small sample of what is happening. I think there will be probably about 10 or 15 dedicated open access publishers that I know that are basically pending, that will join in the short term. And so we expect the directory to grow quite rapidly. Here we have one example, Athabasca University Press, a dedicated online publisher connected to Athabasca. Athabasca funds this press through the library budget, and they have about 60 books in the directory. Now, you'll notice that there are some things here in the top about. You can have some information about the press, peer review information, and licensing information. Both these are mandatory. We require all presses to provide information about their peer review process so that we can verify that they're actually academic publishers. And the same for licensing info. We require open access licenses, basically CC licenses. And this way, we try and provide some form of quality control for the directory. So here we have the same book again, Bomb Canada, published by Athabasca. And you can see that there is an availability link, which automatically links to some of the vendors on the net. And publishers can also provide them links themselves. We can, of course, also go to the full text, and you go back to the website of the publisher, and you can download the whole book as a PDF, or in this case, the separate chapters of the book. So, with that, I end my presentation. Thank you.